This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
That KFC started in Utah. Did you know that?
I did not.
Oh. Yeah, we had the first, it's Harmon's Cafe here, and it got changed to KFC. But apparently, as I looked into it, so it's like, why? He wasn't LDS or anything. But Pete Harmon, who's a local restaurateur, met Colonel Sanders in Chicago and was like, I got a deal for you. Let's make a restaurant. And he did. Here.
Interesting.
In Utah. So.
Well, it's probably a good thing it was called KFC and not UFC, because otherwise it probably would have gotten confused with, like, fighting.
I wonder which one started first. Probably UFC.
I feel like that's older.
When did this start? You look up UFC, I look up KFC. When did KFC start? 1930. Beat that.
I'm waiting.
Oh, I thought you were looking it up.
No, I am.
I'm waiting. I looked up URC accidentally, not rugby.
UFC.
1993. Oh, wow. So they could have been the first UFC and it would have been fine.
It could have been UFC.
But I feel like Utah fried chicken doesn't quite hit as Kentucky fried chicken.
No. No, not really. It sounds, yeah, no.
You know what's even better? None of them have nothing to do with the Great Lakes. Should we get started?
All right. Hello.
Ahoy.
And welcome to the Under the Waves podcast. It's a show about chicken and all things shipwrecks and more. On the Great Lakes, my name is Andrew. I shall be your captain for today's entertainment.
And I'm Michelle. Hey there. Hi there. Ho there. And welcome aboard our 50th episode. I was going to look up a sound and I can't find it right now and I don't want to. So it's me. I'm the sound. Yay.
Welcome to number 50. It's kind of crazy that we're already here. It's kind of crazy that we're just getting here. It's kind of both. It depends
on how you look at it. The first way you said it is very inspiring. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yes. Second way is like, oh man. So thanks for that.
Like it or not, here we are, is what a feller's saying. So we've made it. We're pushing on into the unknown. Well, all right, so we're going to get right into it with today's story. So today we are continuing our Grace Period saga with the story of the Grace A. Channon. It is C-H-A-N-N-O-N. I think if it's a first name, it's Shannon. If it's not a first name, it's Channon. So we're probably just going to say Channon just because it's not a first name. But if it's incorrect, we do apologize. But yeah, the Grace A. Channon.
We did look it up because Andrew had a good point of saying Shannon. And it is Shannon, but this is, like you said, a last name. I kept accidentally saying Channing to myself. So who knows what we'll end up calling this ship.
The Grace A. Tatum.
Yup.
And a quick warning from our editor. While this story is a bit short due to lack of information that is provided due to history. It is a bit of a doozy towards the end on the morbidity scale, so we'll give you a trigger warning close to the tragedy. It does involve a child, and if that's not really your jam, or you're just not really in the headspace for this sort of story right now, we get it, and we'll see you guys on the next go-around. Or feel free to skip down to the end and hear our trivia and sign off for the week. Whichever you choose is best for you. Let's get into the story. So the Grace A. Channon, or Channon for short today, was a three-masted canal schooner built in 1873. She was constructed by the W.S. Ellenwood and Company of East Saginaw, Michigan, and owned by Henry Channon and Henry Graham.
If you find someone with the same name as you, start a business.
Absolutely. Henry and Henry and Company. Her length was 140.7 feet or 42.9 meters, beam 26 feet or 7.9. I'm sorry. Her length was 140.7 feet or 42.9 meters, beam 26 feet or 7.9 meters, and depth of hold was 11.6 feet or 3.5 meters. Her tonnage was 265.99 tons, and she was propelled by, you guessed it, sail. I didn't guess it, actually, so I was really hoping it was a triple expansion steam engine. I know! I know.
The first schooner to have a triple expansion steam
engine. When you said you guessed it, I don't know. It's been a long day. I'm tired, and I forgot that a schooer has sails.
That's fair. And we should cover another triple expansion steam engine sometime. Just to
at some point.
Keep you entertained.
For old time's sake. Anyway, she was propelled by sail. The Channon was named after owner Henry Channon's 10-year-old daughter. She, the boat, not the 10-year-old, mainly transported loads of coal, wheat, and on occasion corn, lumber, and wrought iron. The Channon was a canal schooner, also called a canaller. This was because she was built to be able to travel through the Welland Canal. Remember that little bugger? The one where ships would either have to be built upbound from in order to live their lives on the Great Lakes, or the ships, much like the SS Algoma from episode 46, were bare bones built outside the Great Lakes and Welland Canal region, only to have to be broken apart and carried through the canal on other ships before being reassembled once through said Welland Canal. Well, the Channon was special because she was one of the lucky ones able to move herself through the locks. According to a report series done by the Wisconsin Historical Society entitled Sailing Canallers, a Great Lakes Regional Context, quote, canallers were a vessel type specifically designed to maximize cargo space when traveling through the Second Welland Canal, allowing passage into and out of Lake Ontario from Lake Erie and the St. Lawrence River, respectively, end quote. These sailing canallers mainly had the fore and aft rigging of schooner rigs, though a few would end up being barks, barkentines, brigantines, and eventual steamships. The Welland Canal had strict lock dimensions that canallers had to be built within in order to traverse the area. Typically, canallers were built with, quote, straight stems, narrow beams, nearly vertical sides, flat bottoms, folding cat heads?
Cat heads.
Folding or pivoting davits, and short, highly canted bowsprits, and jib booms, which could be raised while traversing the locks, as well as less of a rake to their masts and transoms, and longer gaffs, end quote. Believe you me, that's a lot of info in a very short amount of time. So we'll clear up some of these things, since these are some really cool ships. Technically, canaller is a rather broad term, but names have fluctuated throughout the years and in various contexts. There are schooner canallers, sailing canallers, propeller canallers, and probably much more. For ease of grouping everyone together with one term, though, we're just going to say canallers and specify when we need to. So canallers stood to be a rather important, quote, economic and industrial link between the eastern and western United States, helping propel the Midwest and maritime transportation into the modern era, end quote, in the mid to late 1800s. Canals were vital to the Midwest region's transportation prior to the development and spread of road and railway networks. Grain, corn, lumber, and later iron ore were transported from Lakes Michigan, Superior, and Huron down to the bustling and growing ports on Lakes Erie and Ontario. When returning back to the Northern Lakes, ships would mainly bring the heat source of coal, which was also used to power various factories, and to the canalers. As we've learned, all shipping companies are wanting to make a profit, so they needed a type of ship that could carry the most while taking up the least amount of space and fitting within the locks of the Welland Canal. The first Welland Canal opened on November 30, 1829, limited vessels to 110 feet in length by 22 feet beam and an 8-foot draw. And that's 33.5 meters long by 6.7 meters wide and drawing 2.4 meters for all you guys not using freedom units. So ship companies, while grateful for the access to all lakes now, were frustrated that even if they had a vessel that met the dimensions provided, they could only be filled to partial capacity to meet the draw factors. In order to help with this issue, after almost 20 years of putting up with the first Welland Canal and its 40 locks, Canada bought the Welland Canal Company and started making expansions. The new Welland Canal expanded in 1846, brought the number of locks down to 27, while increasing...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Increasing the dimensions a ship could be to 150 feet long by 26.5 feet wide and 9 feet deep. That's 45.7 meters long, 8.1 meters wide, and 2.7 meters deep. This is where shipbuilders designed and now built the infamous bulky canal schooners. Canalers were boxy to accommodate large cargo loads and had bluff bows. Bluff bows are when the front of a ship is more broad and rounded, opposed to the more sharply pointed bows. Sometimes the bow can even be flat, but canalers had the large rounded bows. Some benefits of a bluff bow were to provide more space for cargo, more of an increase in buoyancy in the forward part of the ship versus in the aft area to help the ship ride over the waves rather than through them, presumably keeping the ship both drier and safer. It also helped to increase the structural strength of a ship, making them more resilient to wave impact and creating an overall smoother ride. Bluff bows didn't provide the most efficient speeds, as some sharp-bowed ships did. However, the more rounded shape did help prevent the bow from effectively burying itself in the waves. But they weren't known as speedy ships by any means.
I like a little bit of a floating bathtub.
Like a clawfoot tub minus the claws.
So a bathtub.
Yeah. But not like your normal fiberglass one, because that one just would be kind of silly.
Not a modern one, yeah.
The other aspects of the canalers were flat bottoms and sterns to help fit properly within the locks. The flattened sterns allowed for ships to be longer with more cargo space while still staying within the needed dimensions. Speaking of dimensions real quick, shipbuilders would build these ships in such a way that when they traveled through the locks, they were mere tenths of an inch between the ship and the canal wall. Talk about close quarters. Especially if it's just a couple quarters width of space.
You don't want to sneeze.
No. The flattened hulls were to help decrease the draw so that the ship could be filled close to full capacity, but this made the canalers require a removable centerboard. Most lake and ocean-going vessels had their deep draws or drafts to help counteract the lateral movement the wind in the sails caused a ship, but canal schooners didn't have that luxury. Hence, the removable centerboard was an attempt to provide some lift and counteract the tipping caused by using sail power. Canalers also... I almost just said canalers.
Cantaloupes? What?
Canalers also tended to have short bowsprits and highly canted jib booms. Bowsprits, recall, are the spar or pole extending forward and up from a ship's bow, to which the forestays are secured to. And a jib boom extends the bowsprit even further and is what the jib or other head sail is attached to. And canted is just a really fancy way of saying it was slanted or tilted. Pinkies out kind of way.
Trying to help you, man. I don't know.
Thank you. Canalers had really slanted bowsprits in order to take up less room, as well as the booms on the main or mizzenmast, depending on the number of masts a canal schooner had, were oftentimes shortened so that they did not hang out over the stern. Canalers overall looked like compacted and rounded out schooners. It's kind of like...
It's like they're chubby
take a
little
schooner
cousin.
And put it in a box.
Or that.
Your cat outside of a box is kind of like long, lanky, whatever. And then your cat in a box is just kind of like a loaf.
Yeah. If it fits, it sits. If it fits in the canal, then it's good.
Yep. How can we make boat box-sized? These bowsprits and jib booms increased the length of a vessel by around 30 feet or more, which is 9.1 meters. That's not space you want to waste on essentially just a sailing joust. In order to help with this, shipbuilders couldn't just get rid of these vital sailing apparatuses. Would it be apparati?
Apparatin. Apparat.
Boxin. Instead, Mason. They created a sort of hoist system where the bowsprit and jib boom could be raised out and could be raised up and out of the way while not under sail. Historical photographs show a kind of raising system in the head rigging, which would have raised the bowsprit up toward the main mast in a way not unlike how sails were being raised. A section of the bow railing would either be removable to allow the bowsprit to move up freely or be attached to the bowsprit itself and rise up with it.
It's starting with this and a couple of the ones we're going to talk about after that, after this, is really cool of how they're just like, let's make a compacted ship even more compact. Because like, we need all these pieces that extend and hang over and whatever. But then like, you just fold it all up, go through the lock, unfold. It's kind of like the first Transformer. It's kind of cool.
And there's a picture you included here. It's a drawing of a, quote, extreme canaler, which just, I just think of like Tony Hawk. Being on that boat, just extreme.
It's extreme canaler. Well, it's only named extreme because it would fit exactly to the Welland's canal dimensions. So, like, it's the max size it could be and still fit through, which is why it was called extreme. But I wish it was cool enough to be on a on a skate park. I don't know.
Well, in order for the bowsprit, jib boom, and railing contraption to be held up, pins or latches were built into either side of the ship's knight heads. What is a knight head, you ask? I ask the same. Knight heads are the vertical posts, usually close to or directly on the bow, that are used for supporting the bowsprit, belaying lines, and in the cases of canalers, anchoring down the raised bowsprits and company.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of this term. The pictures in any description was really confusing to me. To me personally, but they're just like poles, and apparently sometimes they had like a carving of a knight's head on top or a head on top, so it's called a knight's head, and now it's just like a pole or
interesting
plank. But yeah, we'll include some pictures. There's a lot of like pieces and bits descriptions that I
Pete's and Tom's in here
that confused me. Because I know, like, the basics of ships, but, like, you look
all
up the all
the... All the Pete's and his sakes.
Exactly. You look up all the nitty-gritty details, and I'm like, what is that now? What is this? Oh, my gosh. It's crazy. So, hopefully it makes sense to some people, but we'll include some pictures, too, for you visual learners out there like myself.
Same here. Well, back to the ship. The Grace A. Channon, our ship for today, had a, quote, U-shaped bar that spanned the bowsprit and was inserted into iron eyelets on the exterior of the hull, effectively pinning the bowsprit and bow railing in place, end quote. A lot of ships also made use of this, and there's a picture we'll include where an iron eyelet can be seen. Don't worry, it's nicely circled in red for us all to be able to spot. Otherwise, I would have no idea where it is in this photo.
Yeah, it's like a I spy without nothing looking different.
Yep, that's my thought too.
I'm gonna go back to mute.
All right, now... If you've got your thinking caps on, which not all of us do, you might be wondering, with the bowsprit and front railing moving all around every which way, what happened to the ship's forecastle?
So I thought it was forecastle.
That's how it's spelled.
It's forecastle.
I know I've seen it before. I knew it was supposed to be spelled or sound pronounced differently. I just forgot what it was. Forecastle.
Oh, really?
And if you're reading it, it's forecastle.
Yeah, that was new to me. I would have led you astray on forecastle, and then one article I happened to find said, it's pronounced forecastle. I was like, what? That's who? So.
Well, just in case you guys are wondering, what happened to the ship's forecastle? That's a great question. It was usually either non-existent or just smaller and not encasing the bowsprit, instead extending on the other side and making two separate forecastles. Not a foxhole, a forecastle. A port and starboard one. For the rest of you, thanks for asking, a forecastle is the forwardmost part of a ship's upper deck that houses equipment such as the anchor, windlass, and on sailing ships is a raised structure at the bow that in past times was used for both defense and observation, as it looked like a small castle. That's why it's not pronounced like castle at all. It's forecastle.
You never fought from a... Wouldn't it just be a soul? Instead of a castle, it's just a soul? Get it? Because you break it up.
It also housed the sailors' sleeping quarters below deck.
Okay, mister. It's also windlass, not windless, so...
Sure I'll take that? What I can get! I don't
Are
know
you
anymore.
Sure about that?
You sure about that? I'm tired of this, Grandpa.
That's too bad. The sails were slightly altered on canalers to be able to fit the needs and size requirements asked of them compared to regular schooners. The need for fewer objects, including the mizzenmast boom hanging off the stern of a ship, was also imperative. But that also changed the shape and the size of the mizzenmast a bit, making it more boxy. The peaks on the sails were lower, and the boom didn't overhang the back of the boat by more than a few feet, if at all. And we'll include a picture of the differences. It's much easier to see it than just to hear about it.
Yeah, for the untrained eye like myself, it doesn't look like much of a difference, but there is a slight difference.
There makes a difference at B.
So we'll include those examples to kind of, I don't know, show it.
And one last interesting structural fact are the cat heads. As ships got bigger over time, so did the anchors needed to hold them in place. These large anchors could prove quite damaging to wooden ships when pulled if they slammed into the side. The solution? Cat heads! It's not what you're thinking, but it might be. Cat
what
heads
are you
are...
thinking? Actual cat heads?
Yep. Cat heads are large wooden beams located on both the port and starboard side of the bow on a sailing ship. These angled beams, usually around 45 degrees, support the ship's anchors when they are being raised, or as it's called, weighing anchor, or lowered, which is letting go, just like in Frozen. You can't have these large wooden pieces sticking out in the Welland Canal when the walls are mere tenths of an inch from your hull. The fix? Hinged cat heads. It's like a good band name or something, I feel.
Hinged cat heads.
The hinges
unhinged
were located.
Cat heads.
Unhinged. Oh, buddy. The hinges were located just inside of the ship's railing, which allowed the cat heads to be flipped back onto the deck when passing through a canal lock. Same thing when the canaler's stern davits, or crane or pulley like devices on the back of a ship that raised and lowered the lifeboat, or yawl, They were also equipped with hinges and folded away during lock transfers. Some were rotating and could swing around onto the deck, with the yawl boat being stored on the deck.
Literally, it's so cool. It's like, it makes it pocket size, like a Polly Pocket boat.
Polly Pocket.
Have you never heard of a Polly Pocket?
I remember Polly Pocket.
Okay. I was worried for a second.
These are pretty cool.
Right?
Now, an unfortunate characteristic of the canal schooners was that due to their boxy shape, they did notoriously bad in storms and heavy weather. You can only be good at so many things if you're purpose-built for one thing. Or two things. Maybe three. Purpose-built. One storm. Hmm. What?
You said purpose-built. I thought it was interesting. My mind hung up on that. I'm sorry. Carry on.
It's okay. It's okay.
Don't talk down to me.
I'm not. We're talking about purpose-built craft.
Okay.
One storm in October of 1873 took out six different canalers in Oswego, sending them all sinking to the bottom of the lake with all hands on deck. While they might not have been the easiest to sail, canalers played their vital role as go-betweens quite well and connected the western lakes with the eastern ones. No canalers can be seen floating today, sadly. Anyone wanting to study them either has to find articles on the web, which is the route that we obviously took, or observe them under the waves. And Michelle says, join her. She would love to help guide an expedition to an underwater location to see things growing on an old ship.
I believe the words you're looking for are no thank you.
Or that. There's that too.
But thanks for the offer.
The era of canalers was rather short-lived. More railroads were built and expanded along the ever-growing shores in the Lake Michigan lumber and shares. I thought that that was incorrect, based on where I thought the sentence was going and how the rest of the paper is.
I wrote this and immediately switched off my brain, so I hope the paper's okay.
That's okay.
I'm not anymore, but it should be.
All right. MCR. More railroads were built and expanded along with the ever-growing shares in the Lake Michigan lumber and grain trade. The Welland Canal would need a third upgrade to provide even bigger locks, and these were opened in 1882. The new ship dimensions could be up to 270 feet long, which is, that's a huge growth, 45 feet wide, that's also huge, and 12 feet deep, my goodness. But even that was dug deeper down to 14 feet within the next 2 years after completion. That's a lot of work. That's also a huge upgrade. The age of specialized sailing canaler construction was over. But before it was, we still need to finish talking about the Grace A. Channon. The Channon had a rather short working life, and with no reports to be found, we can more than likely safely assume that she encountered no major accidents or incidents during this time. But when she was only 4 years old, her luck would run out. On the evening of August 2nd, 1877, the Channon was sailing downbound from Chicago, Illinois to Buffalo, New York. She was carrying a cargo of coal. Somehow, some way, she collided with a steam barge called the Favorite. The Favorite smashed into the Channon's port side. It's reported that within 5 minutes of impact, the Channon sank. On board at the time was one of the owners, Henry Graham, along with his two sons, 9-year-old Harry and 7-year-old Alexander. Right before the crash, Henry had both of his boys by his side. And a trigger warning for the aforementioned child death. No gruesome details, just sad details. Skip forward about a minute if you do not wish to be a part of this. When the Channon had been hit and was rapidly sinking, both Henry, the father, and Harry, the 9-year-old, threw themselves overboard and were quickly rescued by the crew on board Channon's yawl. Unfortunately, in all of the chaos, 7-year-old Alexander Graham had become separated from his father and was sucked into the boat's cabin by the rush of incoming water before he could even be rescued. He is the only one who went down with the ship. On the other hand, the favorite experienced some major bow damage and required some extensive reconstruction after it managed to limp its way back to port. No one was lost from the favorite. There are no reports found that specify what exactly was damaged on it. One source claimed that the favorite sunk, but a more credible source said that it did not.
Yeah, and then most sources didn't mention it being sunk either, so I'm guessing it didn't sink. It was only the Channon that sunk, but the favorite lived to strike another day.
Is that foreshadowing?
Oh, not for this story. I think we've heard that name before.
I feel like we have.
I think when we talked about the sport or something, like I feel like we talked about the favorite, because that's not a name you can just brush aside.
That's so, a pretty memorable one.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. Maybe it'll come up in a future story.
Yeah. The Channon remained lost until April 1985, almost 108 years after she sank. She was discovered by shipwreck finders. The men who found the lost canaller were Kent Bell Richard, William Kappelman, and John Trumbo. Since her finding, her wheel, compass, and port light have been brought to the surface and are on display at the North Point Lighthouse in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In July of 2016, a Phase 2 archaeological survey was done by a group of maritime archaeologists and volunteers with the Wisconsin Historical Society, or the WHS. This survey lasted 8 days and resulted in measurements and photographs being taken of the Channon. A baseline was attached from her bow and stretched 141 feet to her stern post along her midline. You can see this line in some of the photos we'll include in our socials.
Yeah, don't pull on me and get excited that it's the rigging brightly yellow colored. It's not.
Somehow it's still holding on to brightness. While studying the wreck, researchers could see that the Channon's martingale was tangled up in the head rigging. And a quick refresher, a martingale is a chain or a cable that manages the tension of the jib boom and other forward rigging. According to this and the survey of the wreck, quote, "The direction and angle of this piece and head rigging corroborate accounts that Grace A. Channon's List placed its head rigging into the bow of the propeller Favorite as the vessel descended. With no order to reverse, Favorite continued moving forward as Grace A. Channon's bow sank below the surface, pulling the head rigging with it before the foremast and bowsprit broke, allowing both to fall to the starboard side of the vessel on the lake bed," end quote.
And in this quote, it says propeller favorite. It's just the favorite was a propeller steamship. It's not that it was stuck in the propeller of the favorite. The favorite hit the Channon with its bow, and then basically, like, the head rigging got tangled and stuff, and it didn't reverse for whatever reason. I wish it was a court case we could have found on this, so, like, who's at fault and what happened. Because also, there's no mention of storm. It's evening. It doesn't say, like, middle of the night. Like, I have no clue why they hit. Not
the visibility or anything. Yeah,
it's a huge lake, and they ran the same path, apparently. But yeah, so apparently the favorite hit the Channon on the port side. Head rigging got all tangled and stuff, and the favorite didn't stop or slow down, apparently, allegedly, and just basically drove the Channon underwater. And that, like, broke the mast and the bowsprit and everything, and you can see, like, damage to the side on the sunken vessel now, which is really sad. But yeah, it's a propeller. It didn't get stuck in the propeller. It's just because the favorite was a propellered steamship.
I was confused about that, actually. Thank you for clarifying that. There is an additional spar that is officially unidentified and lying across the Channon's bow, also tangled up in the rigging, and it may be part of the favorite's steering pole. Today, the Grace A. Channon rests in about 180 feet of water, or 54.9 meters, with her deck located at 165 feet, or 50.3 meters. She's about 12.75 miles, or 20.52 kilometers, northeast of the Bender Park boat launch in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, and slightly embedded in the clay. She still has all of her deck machinery, spars, rigging, and cabin structures with her on site. The Channon's hull still remains incredibly intact, with most of her canaller parts and pieces intact in their original operations, though a lot of it is covered in quagga mussels. The only part of her hull that isn't intact is the port side where the favorite's bow tore into her, almost to the center line at the forward cargo hatch. The deck is also buckled just forward of the foremast, but this was most likely due to the deck being weakened after the foremast broke and then broke further after hitting the clay bottom lake.
Also, she wasn't a wide boat, but to make it halfway through, that's intense. That's a big hit.
Favorite was moving, yeah.
Not the favorite anymore.
No. She does list slightly to the starboard, about 2 degrees, and remains pretty much intact overall. Her bowsprit has since split in two. The U-shaped bar we mentioned prior could be lifted up along with her front railing so that the bowsprit could be hoisted upwards by the rigging has since bent inward, most likely due to her sinking and the bowsprit breaking off. The port side of the bar no longer extends through its metal eyelet, but the starboard side remains attached. Her folding cat heads can be seen along with their attached anchors. The Channon's folding stern davits can also be spotted with one remaining in place, folded inward, while the other has broken off and lies in the sand off her starboard side. If you want some very in-depth, rather intensive reads of the Grace A. Channon's measurements, how she lays today, and the history and comparison of Knallers, check out any of our Wisconsin Historical Society links. We'll post a few in our socials, but in case our social media manager forgets, they are on our website on the, quote, show notes page, end quote. There's also a 3D Shipwrecks link as well where you can tour the ship as she lays from your very own computer. This site does mention that she is 208 feet down and a few other sources followed suit, but the WHS ones stayed rather firm on the 180-foot depth, so that is what we included. The Channon is listed in both the state of Wisconsin and the National Register of Historic Places. That is the condensed history and the short story of the Grace A. Channon.
Yeah, there are papers out here. Just one paper is like 65 pages long and very in-depth. And then if you look at the registry documents for the ship, it's this is measured at this, and this part measures at that, and that part is in this position, which is this many feet from that position. And it's very detailed and specific, and you are more than welcome to read that. We didn't want to spend the next 2 hours reading verbatim someone else's work. But it's very in-depth. The pictures are really cool. The quagga mussels do help keep it clear, even though it's pretty far down. And that's quite the gash in the side that the favorite left. So
it really is.
Yeah. We'll include that picture as well. And you can see from the first one I showed here, Andrew, that it goes literally to the midline and like through the, what's that called? Cargo hold?
Yes.
Hatch cover. Hatchway. Thank you. It's pretty cool. It's pretty intense. All the tangled up headlines and rigging and stuff in the front is really cool to see too, even though it's very sombering, but cool photos with this one. No photos of before, couldn't find any. There's some examples that we kind of showed of like diagrams of people drawing this kind of ship, but the best photos you're going to see of her are of her sunken. So
yeah, and the photo mosaic photo is really cool too. I'm assuming it's just like a stitched together mosaic collage of different photos. It's really cool though to see just what it sort of looked like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool. And I want to, I'll post a link to the 3D Shipwrecks thing, but it's basically where you can like virtually explore the ship based on all these photos that they put together and stuff, which takes a lot of time and work. But it's really cool to just kind of like explore around and you can like move it and stuff, which obviously you can't do that in real life, but we'll post that link as well. Not every ship that we've covered has that, but the ones that do, worth checking it out.
Mm-hmm. So. And that is the story of the Grace A. Channon.
Thank you. Well, last week's trivia, we didn't have any. This week's trivia, we're going to keep it simple and just in relation to water. Which type of water freezes faster, hot water or cold water? Bonus points if you know the name of this reaction and the wherefores and why it occurs. Join us next week for more Great Lake and Shipwreck stories and maybe the conclusion to our Grace Period series. I don't know. Question mark. We'll see. Let us know if y'all like miniseries and if we should try and find a few more to do. We do have one that we're working on that is really quite fascinating, so stay tuned for that. If you have an individual wreck or a series of ships that you'd like us to research and cover, send an email to underthewavespodcast@gmail.com or leave a comment on either of our socials, which is Facebook Under the Waves Podcast or Instagram @UnderTheWavesPodcast. Per usual, our website is up for your viewing pleasure, and that's www.underthewavespodcast.com. Thanks in advance for dropping us a like and follow on your way out. We really appreciate all of you who have been on this journey with us so far. And here's to 50 more sets of 50 episodes. Andrew, don't math that too hard. And in case no one told you today, we love you and we're glad you're here.
50 sets of 50
Yeah, don't think about it. It's fine.
It's fine. Everything's
what are you
fine.
Doing for the next however many years that is?
It's a lot of years. It's currently summertime. We're in the thick of it with the heat, the humidity, the lack of rain, all day sun. Share this with someone who is drinking some refreshing water. Maybe they have a ginormous hydro jug that you're sure barely fits in the passenger seat of their car, let alone any old cup holder. You're sure they must be drinking the water as a recovery from having to lift and lug around such a water bottle, such a large water bottle all day long, which causes them to continuously be thirsty and drink. It's an all-day workout of sorts. It's a vicious, vicious cycle. Maybe you spot someone who has that one coveted Stanley or the newly trending Weck jar. That's a thing.
Never heard of a Weck jar?
I've never heard of a Weck jar.
It's an expensive mason jar. People are going to murder me for that, so.
But it's filled to the brim with ice and maybe some sparkly, colorful version of water. Or perhaps even yet, you're sharing this with someone who is convinced the water that is added to their daily coffees, and yes, coffees plural, is enough to jumpstart their water intake. Whatever realistic or delusional way someone, including yourself, is choosing to hydrate today, share this episode with them. And yes, we see you with your overly used, dented, sticker-filled, and in desperate need of a deep, clean, yet highly loved water bottle that holds just the right amount of liquids for your hydration needs. You might just be the favorite of them all. But shh, don't tell the others. We release new episodes every Friday, and until then, folks, fair winds and following seas.
We'll catch you next time under the waves. Bye!
Cheers. I have an old Nalgene.
I broke my hydro flask.